Up next on Tapestry, we're spending the day in Springville, New York, and visit a fifth-generation farmer who's spreading joy on a four-acre you-pick flower farm.
You cannot beat the children frolicking in the field with a breeze blowing in flowers.
A once-condemned building in the heart of downtown finds new life through the power of local vision.
I mean, we sat in a theater with folks and said, you know that building that you can't even walk into? We're going to transform it into art workshop space, all centered around a cafe and bakery that's going to build community through food and art.
And we wrap our day at the Concord Historical Society, a five-building campus where history isn't just preserved, it's alive.
Every Tuesday evening from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, we have anywhere from 8 to 20 musicians come in. It's just a big jam session open to the public.
That's up ahead on Tapestry, right after this.
Compact Science is your gateway to the science of everything in our region. Join host Sarah Jane Gomlich-Green and investigate the geology of Niagara Falls, discover the chemistry in sponge candy, and learn how density affects lake effect snow. Watch Compact Science on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From in-depth reporting to musical masterpieces, dramas, and mysteries to local bands, Buffalo Toronto Public Media delivers it all. Stay informed, be inspired, and join us. This is Public Media.
Welcome to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Today, we're headed to Springville, New York, a town where deep roots and new ideas bloom side by side. We begin our visit off Route 240 to meet up with Ellen Kriesman.
This field is always evolving. Heavy on Coreopsis, yarrow, there's a lot of yarrow in there, Sweet William.
What started as a few buckets of surplus flowers she grew on part of the family farm has turned into 4 acres of beautiful blooms for all to enjoy.
Here, that's the sweet pea fence. So we've got sweet peas growing up, so zinnias, sunflowers.
On the day of our visit, rose and rose had just been planted, and you could see the tiny buds just popping out of the ground.
They're absolutely beautiful.
After a short tour, we sat down under the flower stand by the roadside.
So I'm a fifth generation farmer on this land. My family's been farming this land since the 30s. They started out as a bean farm. From beans, we went to a dairy farm. The bottom dropped out of dairy farming in the 70s, and my dad started doing vegetables on a much smaller scale. Mm-hmm. We've had customers coming here buying vegetables for 4 decades from my dad. So when I moved back onto the family farm and started to do flowers, my family thought I was crazy. Like, you can't eat flowers. What are you thinking? What does that look like? What do you do with them? No, picture it. So I was growing flowers in my dad's farmland at the time for real estate, for open houses, brokers opens. I would always have a supply of flowers for putting in my staged houses. And I would throw the excess on the end of the vegetable table, throw a price on it, got what I need out of it. They started selling out. And then I started getting phone calls. I was getting a lot of phone calls from brides, and this was 15 years ago, before you pick flowers were ever a thing. I said to my husband one day, you know, why don't I just open up the field and let them come pick what they want? They know what their aesthetic is, if it's more elegant or more rustic or what their color scheme is. 2 years later, I opened up the field to everybody to come and pick flowers.
We are here a few weeks before your season actually opens, right?
We start in the greenhouse, and 80% of the flowers that you see here come from seeds. Little by little, the 278 unique seed packs that we're doing this year start to come to life. And this is the time of the year where there's this window after the threat of our last frost.
Right.
We need to get a ton of things in the ground and get it started. The seeds that I do here are all grown for a specific reason. And my reasoning is stem length and longevity in a vase. These rows that you see behind us that are in their
infancy
right now, they're growing, but we do those aisles in between the rows wide enough for wheelchairs, walkers, people to get past each other. It's very important to us to be accessible. So the grass that you see, that was another thing that was a little bit of a paradigm shift for my family.
Right.
Planting grass in between the rows of the flowers.
It feels like that's not efficient, right?
No, Lord, right? No. But if we have a downpour and we have guests coming in 2 hours, it's a little bit easier for that rain to drain down in a grass row than it is being mud for the rest of the day or 2 days. So I get a lot of credit for this, for the field, for the flower stand, but my husband, John, is the brawn behind my ideas of, he makes that part of it come to fruition.
That's a true partnership. Yeah. So you are a master gardener.
I am.
Talk to me about that.
That program is no joke. You need to know a little bit about everything. So in the group, there are people who have their own specialties. One is a master on all things trees. One has a hosta specialty. One has a, you know, we all have our strengths. I happen to be the cut flower and dabbling in vegetables person.
So what is it about flowers that kind of gets you?
They are whimsical and they could be intentional. Flowers seem to have a meaning to everybody. If I asked you what your favorite flower was or what this particular flower means to you, everyone has a story with flowers. Whether it's my grandfather used to bring gladiolas to my grandmother every Friday after work, or we had these dahlias growing up outside our house along our foundation my whole childhood. Everyone seems to have a connection with flowers. If I asked you, what's your favorite flower? So, why is it? Is it your favorite flower?
So my mom always had a flower garden. Like, you know, and I think it was a big deal for her. And I think as she's aged, it's been difficult for her to not have that space to be able to do that anymore. She always grew irises.
Okay.
And so for me now in my home, I don't know, but when I have them planted, I just feel close to her.
It's a feeling. It's a feeling. It's not just the product. It's the experience. It's a feeling.
Yes.
Whether it's gladiolas, irises, whatever it is, there seems to be a connection with everybody with flowers. You cannot beat the children frolicking in the field with a breeze blowing in flowers. And we've had folks that have been coming here for 7 years, 10 years, and this is their meeting place for their family. They take a group family photo and they come back year after year, and then they'll come back with a new stroller and there's a new addition to the family. And so I'm joined in on all of these family milestones that bring me incredible joy. And I'm watching families grow, and I've become friends with a lot of these folks, and that's very gratifying for me.
Well, it's great that you found the thing that gives you joy.
Yeah.
And even better that it gives others joy.
Yeah, a lot of good things happen here. Bring your family, bring your loved ones, bring whoever it is that you break bread with or want to get to know better, or, you know,
Want to give flowers to.
Yeah, whatever your situation is, or just come and breathe some country air, and we're happy to have you.
Ellen's flower fields show what can happen when you mix creativity with a love for the land. Just down the road, a different kind of transformation took root when the whole community came together to bring an old building, ready for the wrecking ball, back to life. We sit down with one of the folks behind the Springville Arts Cafe. She's an owner, a baker, and a big believer in what's possible when people work together, right after this snapshot of Springville history.
You know the name, Pop Warner Football. But do you know the man behind it? Long before the league, the playbooks, or the championships, he was just a kid from Springville, New York. And his story is bigger than just football. Born in 1871, Glenn "Pop" Warner was raised in Springville, New York, with grit, imagination, and a love for competition. He went to Cornell to study law, but found his true calling not in the courtrooms, but on the gridiron. Over a legendary 40-year career, Pop Warner coached at Carlisle, Pitt, and Stanford. He racked up over 300 wins, coached athletes like Jim Thorpe, and brought home 3 national titles. But what truly set him apart? Innovation. He helped shape the game we know today. He introduced the spiral punt, 3-point stance, the single wing formation, and brought in protective pads when players were still suiting up in wool and leather. But Pop didn't just change the game. He changed who it was for. He believed in the power of sports to shape young lives. That's why Pop Warner Youth Football League, founded in his name, still gives millions of kids the chance to grow, compete, and dream. From a small village in western New York to football fields across the nation, Pop Warner's legacy runs deep.
Welcome back to Tapestry. In a small town where a collapsing building once symbolized decline, a determined community found a way to turn bricks and broken beams into a project that would help revitalize Main Street.
The impetus to purchase this building, the original initiative, came from a nonprofit. It came from Springville Center for the Arts and their membership. But I think that just continued to build momentum. But a vision was put forward of, we could figure out a way to take title to this building and transform it into a hub of activity, into a place for great food, into a place for art, into a place that when your relatives come in from out of town and they say, show me your town, we actually have somewhere to take them.
That's Allison Dewey, community organizer, nonprofit director, and mother turned artisan baker of the Springville Arts Cafe. We spent some time with Allison learning about the effort to restore the building. So talk to me a little bit about what this building was like before the transformation we see today.
For folks to imagine, you've got a brick building connected to two neighboring historic brick buildings. And you have years and years of neglect and drops and drips of water that over time just collapsed that roof all the way down into the basement.
But the concept started at the Springville Center for the Arts. Is that how it works? Explain the business model.
We have this nonprofit art element. We have a set of worker owners, and that includes me and other folks that manage and operate this business every day. And then at this point, over 300 community owners. So we're both worker and community owned. And those community owners have made a commitment to this project and to downtown Springville, to Springville in general.
Okay.
And they have literally invested and they own a piece of Main Street.
It's a way to think outside the box when it comes to towns like Springville that need these kinds of attractions on their main street and throughout the downtown area.
And as you tour through small towns, not that this isn't also an issue in cities, but you know, there's no big developers hanging out in small towns ready to use their leverage and resources to pile money into a main street. And in Springville, what's amazing is we never lost our core. Like, there still is a downtown strip between the lights, but we were seeing what you talked about in terms of decline. And to reverse that meant we all need to come together and figure out, how do you invest in a small town Main Street? How do you invest in these buildings that need so much investment? There were already hundreds of folks who have seen the progress of the Art Center and what that organization's been able to achieve, right? And so you have trust. I mean, we sat in a theater with folks and said, you know that building that you can't even walk into? We're going to do this to it. We're going to transform it into art workshop space, artist residency apartments, a rooftop garden, all centered around a cafe and bakery that's going to build community through food and art. Those folks believed that that was possible, and they said, we'll help figure this out.
Allison toured us through the space, including a basement where art classes are held, a second floor that offers living quarters for artists in residence, and a beautiful rooftop garden providing vegetables and herbs that are used in the kitchen.
So,
hello.
This is the bakery.
Okay.
It's where I spend most of my time.
Yeah.
But we're mixing and shaping bread. We're baking it here in the morning. And this oven, again, is testament to all the people involved in the spirit of support, power of community. Like, we thought we could get this oven in the building assembled. We also just kind of generally thought we could get it in the building, and so that was not true. So it really took like half of Springville standing out on Main Street, stopping traffic, getting this oven off a truck, getting it pushed in the doors up there.
Yes, but
And then having it taken apart deck by deck, and then the Springville football team coming and bringing those pieces back into here.
Oh my goodness.
So you didn't start on this journey as a baker.
Thinking about food service and bread making, a different journey that really just started in my home kitchen. And then, you know, we started making some of the things we think are going to be Arts Cafe, so that when we're talking to someone or at an event about our vision for this building, it's not just words, but it's, and why don't you try this? Why don't you put this piece of bread in your mouth? Try this scone. Yes. And I think that made a tremendous difference, again, with trust and a belief in what was mm-hmm. coming. But beyond that, our mission is to build community through food and art, to create a place that people can come and build new connections, that we're creating a more and more vibrant Springville, and that we're doing that in partnership with all the businesses. On this trip, again, we're all at this point pulling in the same direction of trying to champion Springville and create a place that's really amazing to live, work, and play.
There's more Tapestry coming up. Stick around.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. For our final segment, I'm excited to introduce you to Joel Mall. Joel is the longest-serving postmaster in Springville's history, but it's what he's done after retirement that really stands out. As a dedicated volunteer and the chairman of the board of directors at the Concord Historical Society, Joel has become one of the town's most passionate storytellers and stewards of local history.
What is it about history that makes you so passionate?
I hated history in high school, but they were teaching me about the Crimean War and things that I couldn't relate to.
Right.
Once I started getting involved in local history, I could relate to the different things in the community.
And you know, I've been to a lot of history museums in my time. This is a little different. Obviously, your mission is like other historical societies to do what?
To preserve and promote the history and the people of the town of Concord and the village of Springville.
A lot of times, historical societies or museums are in one solitary building. You have an entire campus.
Yes, our campus consists of five buildings. Our original building was an old jewelry store that became the Pop Warner Museum. Then we started expanding. After a flood in Springville, we acquired an adjacent building that had been condemned following the flood, and that became our 1890s general store. We also have an 1840s carriage house behind the old jewelry store, and in that we have old carriages, sleighs. One notable thing that we do have in there is the racing sulky that was used by the racehorse Guy K. Protector in 1954 and 1955. It was the first racehorse to break the 2-minute mile and set the world record. And our newest addition is the Heritage Building that we're in right now. Our fifth building is the Lucy Bensee Genealogy and Research Center. This building that we're in right now, in less than a year, we raised, through only local donations, not one penny of government assistance, grants, or anything else, we raised $172,000. And through all the volunteer labor and that, we have a building here that's worth about $500,000.
When we first arrived, the first building that I saw and recognized was the Mercantile Building. And it is, I'm telling you folks, it is like walking into an episode of Little House on the Prairie. Talk to me about why you have that building set up the way that you do.
We decided to set it up as a general store. In the late 1800s, a general store was the main meeting place for the community, the main grocery store, hardware store, and this gave us the opportunity to display so many old artifacts that we had sitting in boxes.
Now, the other thing that I notice is that it is a gathering place even today. Like, you have music at the Mercantile.
Yes, every Tuesday evening from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, we have anywhere from 8 to 20 musicians come in. They sit around. It's just a big jam session open to the public. When the weather's nice, they play on the front porch.
I love that. Absolutely love that. So as you enter or as you exit the Mercantile Building in the back, it takes you into a new building, the building we are in, the Heritage Building. But it is like literally being inside of a main street. Can you talk about what's here in this building and why you designed it the way you did?
Following the bicentennial in Springville in 2012, we had things on display all over the community, every available storefront that we could put stuff in. And then we started boxing it up after that and realized that if we're boxing it up, it's going to sit here for another 100 years before anybody looks at it. So we built this building, which is 40 foot by 48 foot, two stories high. Right down through the center, we put the brick Main Street, because Springville had a brick Main Street in 1912. And we have street lights and utility poles and that, buildings that you can go into these various buildings to see the displays that we have inside.
So talk to me about what we have here on this particular Main Street in Springville.
When you first walk in from the Mercantile, you're stepping into Spalding's photographic parlor. And Mr. Spalding was a photographer here in Springville just following the Civil War. Right here on Main Street, the building that he was on, the second floor, still exists. And outside of that, the next building is the Teddy's Candy Kitchen.
Okay.
It was the cafe on Main Street in 1930s, 40s, and early 50s.
Okay.
Then it became Vandermeer's Bakery and then Jewel's Bakery, and it is the current art cafe.
That's right. The same cafe we visited earlier in this episode. Another display in this exhibit features the story of a chicken farmer from Morton's Corners, just a few miles from Springville. But this wasn't just any farmer. Jack Yellen raised chickens by day and wrote lyrics for MGM by night, penning more than 750 songs for Hollywood's golden age of film.
Wow.
1931, the then governor of New York State was Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
He came to Mr. Yellen and he said, I'm going to run for president. I need you to write me a campaign song. So Jack wrote Happy Days Are Here Again, which is the theme song for the Democratic Party to this day.
To this day.
He also wrote Ain't She Sweet, You Are My Sunshine, Alabama Jubilee, Down by the Ohio, and 729 more.
There are a lot of prominent figures in Springville, and we're going to talk about a couple of them. So next to the Heritage Cinema, I see the Concord Medical Group. That looks like an interesting spot. Tell me about that one.
Well, just to the left of the Concord Medical Group, in the same storefront, we have Dr. Waite's dental office.
Okay.
And Dr. Waite was a Springville dentist, and in 1895, he and an associate there took a German painkiller that was only moderately successful. If they gave one person a shot of that, it killed all the pain, and they were happy, and they gave the same shot to somebody else, and it just killed them completely. Just dead.
Okay.
50% of the people were allergic to something in this German painkiller.
Oh, my goodness.
Dr. Waite and his associate at Temple identified the toxin that was causing this problem, removed it, replaced that toxin with a 2% solution of cocaine, and he named his product Novocaine. And that's the same Novocaine that we all get today when we go to the dentist.
Dr. Waite from Springville.
Dr. Waite from Springville. Right on Main Street, we have the R.B. Waite building. It's a three-story building. It's still there. It was built in the early 1900s. And that was the world headquarters for the distribution of Novocaine.
Oh.
Dr. Waite had over 100 employees working there, shipping Novocaine all over the world.
My goodness.
Until 1928, when he sold his patents and retired as Springville's first millionaire.
As I look around the room, I see the Leland House and the Schuster Motor Car Company.
George Schuster was the chief mechanic for the Thomas Motor Car Company in Buffalo. In 1908, the New York Times got the idea to plan an automobile race from New York City to Paris, France. The Germans, the French, the Italians, and several other entered cars in this race. When you think about New York to Paris, you think about the Atlantic Ocean. That's your first obstacle. But if you go west instead of east, you can put 3,000 miles on before you get to any more water. Then head north to Alaska. It's only 40 miles from Alaska to Siberia across the Bering Strait.
Okay.
Get there in the middle of winter. It's frozen. You can drive that 40 miles. Now you're in Siberia, Russia, Poland, on into Paris. Very simple. Except in 1908, there was only 112 miles of road in the United States fit for automobiles.
So how did they do that?
They drove on railroad tracks. They drove on towpaths along canals, anywhere and everywhere they could. George got to Alaska driving a Buffalo, New York-built Thomas Flyer automobile.
How long did the race take?
Took 169 days to go 22,000 miles. George eventually was rolled into Paris and beat the Germans by 4 days, beat the Italians by 30 days.
You have such a rich display and exhibit of Springville history. I love how interactive it is, that it's not something that's just behind glass. People can walk around these buildings and experience it. And it feels like that was kind of your concept and your dream all along.
We have kiosks throughout this building.
Mm-hmm.
The kiosk in front of the Jack Yellen, you touch that, you can listen to Jack Yellen's music. The kiosk in the George Schuster display, we have 16 questions about the New York to Paris auto race. You select the question you want and touch it, and you will get the answer in George Schuster's own words and his own voice. Even though he died at age 99 in 1972, we did find that in 1965, the New York Times recorded him in an interview for a radio program.
Really?
We got a tape of that radio program, and then we geared the questions to his answers. So you can go in there and you can actually ask George a question and get an answer from George. On that the front of each of our displays, we have QR codes. So if somebody isn't back here to give you a personal guided tour, you just point your iPhone at these QR codes that are on each of the buildings,
yep.
And you will get about a four-minute talk about that exhibit.
A self-guided tour. Yeah. What is the price of admission to come and see everything you have here at this historical society?
Actually, we don't have any admission. We work strictly on donations, and some people are very generous with donations, but we're not going to turn you away if you don't drop anything in a donation box.
So it's free to come and experience all of this, and the work is done then by volunteers.
Everything is volunteers. We have no paid employees in the organization.
Well, everybody in Springville should certainly come visit if you haven't already, but I would say anybody in Western New York needs to come and make this trip and come and visit Joel, right?
I'll try to be here.
Thank you so much for spending part of your afternoon with us today.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
That wraps up this episode of Tapestry. Next week, we head to Franklinville in Cattaraugus County. We'll visit a blueberry farm, the miner's cabin, which isn't a cabin at all, and meet the young couple who create immersive and interactive local history challenges year after year. What's happening in your town? Let us know by emailing tapestry@btpm.org. Tapestry is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can listen to all our episodes at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Thanks for listening.